our meeting will be a pleasant one, and I transmitted lang hier gaan sit nie, so dat ons kan almal huis toe gaan en rustige aand geniet, want ons gaan morgen baie vroeg begin met ons werk in die huis. So die Ralshock is still Ralshock German just now, if you want. honorable members, we are proposing that we allow the IEC to present for 15 minutes. We allow Treasury to present for 15 minutes. We have got their presentations. And thereafter, we engage in discussions as the committee. And then, of course, thereafter, we will decide on how we take it forward, depending on how our discussions go. But it's a very straightforward agenda, two presentations, engagement with the presentations, and then for us to discuss. Can I have an indication if that is acceptable as the agenda, honorable members? Honorable Muller, happiness, thank you, everybody. And Treasury is here, are they? Oh, Treasury is here, okay. Is that okay with you that we give you guys about 15 minutes to present, maximum? And then we'll engage with your presentation. Can we hand over to you, Mr. Mamabolo?
Hold on, sir.
We're just double checking as have all members got hard copies. We've got some here for you. You need hard copies?
We've got Chairperson. I'm just not sure about apologies. I don't see Mr. Singh. He knows that we are meeting and he's supposed to be here.
Oh, you wanted apologies, right? Okay. We have only one apology from Chandler Ngubendaba because I think she's studying. Everybody else we're assuming will join us. Okay? Sorry about that, Mr. Mamabolo.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I also use the opportunity to extend the apology of members of the Commission who are not able to be with us. Two of them have medical issues that they are dealing with. Commissioner Judge Makanya has just been discharged from hospital, and Commissioner Fina has also had an eye operation. Commissioner Selane is on external duty, as is the chairperson. Commissioner Love, being a part-time commissioner, has engagements in her primary area of employment. So with those said then, Chair, the outline of our presentation is as follows. We're looking at the current environment, the core principles which the Commission had articulated, and we look at our understanding of the envisaged defined functional areas and the costing. Then we report on our interaction with National Treasury. We then present a revised approach and its implications, and lastly deal with challenges. And that will then conclude the presentation. Now, in terms of the environment, the Commission wishes to reiterate that South Africa remains one of the only few countries which currently does not regulate party funding, in particular the private side of party funding. However, transparency and regulation of party funding is an important aspect of free and fair elections, and it's a critical ingredient in the combating of corruption. We also acknowledge, and our colleagues from Treasury will talk a bit more about this, that the public sector is facing severe fiscal constraints. On the other hand, we understand the importance and the urgency of implementing a regulatory regime for party funding ahead of the elections next year. And we further acknowledge that there is a need to reduce public spending by sharing of resources. The Commission has been very strong in indicating the following key core principles. Firstly, that there are compelling political, operational, and financial reasons, firstly, to regulate party funding and the management of elections to be two distinct spheres of operation. We can't overemphasize the point that electoral administration as a distinct sphere of operation on the one hand and party funding, they have to be separated. This is important because we want to insulate the electoral process from the politics of party funding. We do not want these things to cross-pollinate, hence they need to be kept as distinct spheres of operation. Secondly, to ensure that party funding regulation mandate does not impair on the electoral operations mandate and vice versa. And thirdly, to ensure that the cannibalization of either budget does not occur and to uphold the financial and operational integrity of each sphere of operation. So this in operational terms means that we need to create a separate entity with a shared governance structures of the Commission to undertake the responsibility. And we acknowledge that this has been provided for in Chapter 6 of the current bill. Now, having clarified the core principles from the vantage point of the Commission, there's a need to deal with the issue of the source of funding for party funding, especially the startup costs. And here again, this is a very strong point of the Commission that we will not be able to use a portion of its baseline allocations, otherwise our baseline allocations in terms of MTF for purpose of doing the following reasons. Firstly, the present budget appropriations to the Commission are based on the current legal mandate and are intended to prepare and conduct the national and provincial elections next year. Secondly, the Constitutional Court judgment in Clope has resulted in a significant financial burden on the Commission. And related with that, the harvesting of address remains a critical national strategic priority which is consuming a lot of resources of the Commission. And we all know that across the state, all baselines have had to be reduced, not just in the ICT, across the whole state machine. So the Electoral Commission has reiterated above in all its interactions with the ad hoc committee during the development of the bill. Now, the present bill essentially expands the scope of party funding mandate beyond the present skills and expertise that are resident within the Commission. Therefore, new skills and new competencies will need to be recruited in order to perform the functions that are contemplated in the bill. This includes, amongst other things, investment management and planning, investigations and enforcement, party funding research and policy development, and a huge area of this is going to be party funding. So these skills are not germane to the management of elections. They are new skills that must now be procured in order to implement the bill. We also presented this as a slide number 7 as a high level functional metrics. Showing that we believe that there has to be a head of the party funding unit, be it the chief electoral officer or some equivalent senior authority who will oversee all operations of the unit. And then we will have to have a party funding management functional area. We'll need to have a research policy and regulatory affairs. We need people who are going to work with matters of enforcement where there are transgressions. And lastly, you need a communication area where you deal with education, media relations, and fundraising. And we indicated that the proposed costing for the startup costs in relation to personnel expenditure, we estimate at about 11 million, and it includes the levels and the numbers of positions that we think will be important at the beginning. Now, in addition to those proposed personnel expenses, there's approximately 34 million that will be required for administrative expenses and the acquisition of assets. For instance, office rentals, telecommunications, subsistence travel, advertising, conferences and workshops, together with political parties, because you can't just introduce a regulatory framework of this magnitude without embodying that with political parties, and so on and so on. Then there are also assets that must be bought, you need computers, and so on. Of course, you know, these computers will work on the present network of the Commission. It's not as if we will set up a separate IT infrastructure completely. They'll have to work on the present IT system of the organization. So that gives us a total of 45 million, which we did present previously. Now, the committee requested us to engage with National Treasury and to provide a report. Indeed, we met with Treasury on the 9th of March, and the following areas were explored, and the consensus that emerged from those consultation is as follows. That the proposed 45 million, as we had presented it, is unaffordable within the current fiscal constraints, and National Treasury was of the view that it might be able to raise an amount of 20 million. Again, I think here, to be fair to colleagues in National Treasury, they did not present this in definitive terms. They postulated a possibility. And they indicated that the funds can only be allocated after a due parliamentary process, and these are matters that members of parliament are well versed with. And based on the current timing, enactment was likely only to transpire a few months into the next financial year, which would reduce the required cost for that financial year, 2018-19. So that allocation will either be through an adjustment budget process or the normal MTEC process. However, no provision has yet been made for this fund. So given these circumstances that our colleagues and presented, it is proposed that the implementation of the bill be done in a phased or incremental in an incremental costing approach, with certain aspects of the legislation prioritized in order to reduce cost. And we note, however, that the current bill does not provide for such an incremental implementation of the bill. So if this were to be the way things go, drafting exercise would have to be done to ensure that we can separate maybe chapters that can be implemented at different times, if that's what the committee, that's the direction which the committee wishes to take. Now, before discussing an incremental approach, it's important to know that the following scope and imperatives of the bill must be in place when the bill is eventually enacted. There must be a system for reports to be received, a system for reports to be compiled, and a system for identifying audits that must be undertaken. We need to ensure that research of best practice and crafting of policies and guidelines, and there will be some knowledge, some expertise around drafting of regulations and so on. Investigation, monitoring and enforcement capacity, as well as capacity to communicate, because if the multi-party democracy fund is to attract corporate donations, it means there has to be a program of talking to corporates and so on. And there has also to be an overall management and administration of the fund. Now, an incremental approach we followed of necessity means only appointing a skeletal staff complement and not everything that we had previously proposed. And we, in particular, say the head of the party funding unit should be the first appointment to be made, because you need the top person to drive the operations, and that at least two senior managers, one for party funding management and the other one for party and regulatory affairs, also be prioritized, and that the current two staff members who work on RPPF be moved to the new entity. And it is proposed that we prioritize the following aspects of the bill: the implementation of the RPPF, the establishment of the Multi-Party Democracy Fund, the annual reporting and disclosure by political parties of all resources and amounts of direct funding, in other words, annual reporting as proposed, and research and policy development. So which means, if we agree on this, then it would mean the enforcement portion would be delayed. And if this revised approach is acceptable, it would mean we populate the first two components of that structure on page 13. And then we will be able to reduce in the first year the cost to 20 million, second year 37, and third year 39. So, we will have an incremental approach to the costing of the implementation of the unit. The implications of this revised approach: the National Treasury will have to provide a minimum of 20 million in 2018-19. And thereafter 38, and the year following that 39 million. The bill itself will not be implemented in total, but certain chapters could be prioritized and others could follow as resources become available. Chair, I think one can close the presentation at this. I think the balance of the presentation members can look at their leisure. The critical message, really, that the Commission wished to place before the committee is that whatever they have to do in terms of the bill must be fully funded. And to that extent, they think the proposal by National Treasury for a phased-in incremental approach is what needs to be considered, and we've got to link that phased-in approach with the quantum of resources that are placed at our disposal, and that the legal instrument itself must be such that it clearly anticipates the fact that the bill won't be implemented in total at once. That will be the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mamabola, Treasury. You got 15 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I would need less time to present. We had a meeting with the IEC on the presentation, and we have reached an agreement, so most of the information that we agreed on is in their presentation. So we just prepared a few slides for the committee. In the content of the presentation, we'd like to cover just the introduction and then cover the intention and what functions need to perform in terms of the bill. We look at the structure of the unit administering the funds and what need to be in place before the structure can be can be financed or can be presented for funding. We look at the principles for the financing of the structure, the startup costs that we've agreed with the IEC. And important for us, we've looked at the budget process, the mechanisms that's in place for us to present the funding for the implementation of the bill. And then lastly, we've also looked at the funds that exist in the provinces and whether we can actually, if there's a mechanism to combine all of those funds in the provinces in into one fund. So that will cover our presentation. In the first slide, I think we just want to cover what the intention of the bill is just shortly. So the purpose of the bill is to establish a multi-fund democracy fund, to establish a representative political party fund that already exists, the regulation of private funding to political parties, and also the annual disbursement of public money through the representative public political party fund, and we refer to certain clauses in the bill. And then I think the question that we want to answer is that where should this fund be placed? And I think the bill is quite clear in clause 21.1 that the Electoral Commission is to establish and administer the funds. In clause 22.2, it also states that the CEO of the fund need to be appointed by the Electoral Commission and responsible for the management and the administration of the two funds. And then what is covered in the bill is also the main functions of the bill, and then we look at what the distribution of the funds to political parties, the monitoring and compliance of the clauses in the bill. It also says there should be proper record keeping and reporting, which cover the administration part and the promotion and communications of the clauses in the bill. It also states, I just want to add that that we should look at the financial implication of the implementation of the bill. So there should be additional funds allocated for the administration of the additional fund, which is the multi-party democracy fund, and also the disclosure of the nations to political parties need to be recorded. In terms of the structure of the unit administering the fund, and I think the IEC has also got a document to say what is the processes and measures that need to be in place before we can actually finance or present the structure for funding. It's important that from the onset that there should be a process map of the governance structure, the administration and the reporting and communication that need to be set out. We need to look at developing proper systems and policies and procedures for the administration of the two funds. And then we should see that the structure that we're proposing, which is the organizational structure, should be aligned with the mapping of the policy, procedure and systems. So those are the things that need to be in place before we can actually look at the implementation of the structure. We also propose to the IEC that the structure should be evaluated by an external HR practitioner before finalizing. And that is basically look at the requirements in terms of the bill and whether it's aligned with the organizational structure that the IEC is proposing. And then we've looked at the financing of the structure, which is basically the startup cost. And what we are proposing is a phased-in approach to allow for the establishment of the fund and develop proper policies, procedures and systems. I think the fact that we need to spend time before the proper implementation of the structure and systems that we look at developing the proper policies, procedures and systems, and that would for us justify a phased-in approach. The fund should be incubated in the IEC following a set service model, So I think that we are proposing that there should be shared of internal audit function, there should be shared of the corporate services functions, and there shouldn't be additional money allocated for those functions. We have agreed on the costing following the phase-in approach, and we've agreed that we are proposing a total of 20 million, and the 20 million would cover the compensation, which is to cover the CEO of the fund, three senior managers, and also administrator. That's additional to the resources that the IEC will make available to the fund. We're proposing the goods and services for 14.3 million and a capital of 215,000. And we've also had an addendum that would itemize the different fund items that need to be funded, and that is aligned to the presentation by the IEC. I think it's also important that we look at the long-term funding of the Act. It is very difficult at this stage because we're not sure the funds that will flow through the new fund and if we will be able to sustain the administration, the implementation of the bill over the long term. I think in a previous presentation to the committee, we've also looked at what exists in the provinces and if there's a possibility that we can combine all those funds in the provinces into one fund, and we've got the numbers there. I just want to go to slide 7. We had tendered some legal advice with regard to this. I think it's important to note that there are provincial laws regulating the funds in the provinces, and this legislation regulating such funds in the provinces must be repealed by the relevant provincial legislatures. So the intention of the bill is to repeal the Representative Political Parties Bill of 1997. But is not repealing the legislation in the provinces. The remainder of the funds that is in those funds in the provinces must be dealt with in the repeal legislation. So this is something that we think we don't have any control over. So in essence, the bill only provides for the repeal of the Representative Political Parties Act of 1997. As well as transitional measures in order to provide guidance on how matters need to be dealt with under the new Act. And then on the last slide, which is very important for us, just to explain to the committee the budget process, we have basically two mechanisms that we can use to provide funding for the implementation of the bill. The one is the adjustment budget process, and there we look at adjustment of budgets in unforeseen unavoidable criteria. And the PFMA Section 30 is very clear that funding can only be considered or adjustments can only be considered due to significant and unforeseeable economic and financial events affecting the targets set by the annual budget. So that is the criteria we use very strictly to see whether we can provide funding through the adjustment budget. So we follow the process then from August every year, and then the funding only become available in December of that particular year, which is December 2018, or it can be January 2019. The other mechanism that's available is the medium-term expenditure committee process, where funding is allocated according to priorities set in the budget mandate paper that's compiled by DPME with the National Treasury. In the medium-term expenditure process, We follow a set process. We have interaction with the different departments. We have technical committee meetings. We have our MTEC meeting and Minister of Committee meetings, and then it goes through Cabinet for approval. There is certain fiscal constraints, so the principles that we use is reprioritization of baselines in according to priorities. And if the funding is approved through that process, funding only becomes available from 1 April 2019. And then we look at the funding of policy initiatives over a three-year period. We must also look at the procedures of establishing a new fund, and we just want to make sure that the directives of the Office of the Accountant General is followed in establishing the new fund. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know what my DGG want to add.
No additions? Thank you very much. Honourable members, before I open, let us just contextualise what we're doing. You'll recall that there was an ad hoc committee that presented APL and a report at the end of last year, and as is practice, anything that was not processed at the end of the year falls off and it had to be reintroduced, which was duly done. And at the point of debating it, the powers that be felt that we have not taken into account the financial implications to the state, and therefore it should be brought back for that purpose. On the 28th of February, the National Assembly re-established this committee and instructed it to take into account the work done by the previous committee. So we're not starting from scratch. It instructed us to take the work done from the previous committee, and it also set the deadline to report by the 30th of March. Just then to indicate to everybody concerned that the last day for plenary is the 27th of March. So we must be able to, on the 27th of March, put this thing on the agenda. Which then also means that if we don't want to fall foul and learn from our mistakes from last year, is that we make sure that it's done with sufficient time for the three-day rule, because that was what was initially the stumbling block, which then takes us to around about the 24th of the month. I'm saying this to members so that you understand what we are doing. So in essence, what we are saying is that by the 24th of the month, this thing must be at the absolute latest ATC, so that it is put on the agenda for the 27th and ratified by the National Assembly by then, on the 27th. So I thought, let me put that so that when we have our discussion, honourable members, my appeal is that we deal with the cost implications, because my understanding was that was why this thing was brought back to us. And that is what they've given us, basically saying to us, this thing is doable, it'll cost us 20 million rand and increase as the years go on, but that means that there is implications. 20 million rand doesn't mean the whole hog, and they will do that. That's really what they were saying. Opening it up to members for comment on these matters and how we take it forward. Everybody wants to speak? All right, then let's you'll be number one, Honorable Matthijs. Just remember, Honorable Self will be two. No, we will come to you. Number one, Self will be number two. Mulder, you'll be number three. Singh, you'll be number four. Gordy, number five. Kalipe, you'll be number six. And Comrade Nkwankwa, you'll be number seven. Oh, no. Everybody will have a turn. I just want to make sure that all parties speak. You'll be number eight, Sis Doris, and then Honorable Liz, you'll be number nine, and you'll be number 10. So We'll do it in that fashion. Then you guys will have a chance to respond. But in also doing that, honourable members, I'm hoping that you're not only asking for questions of clarity, but you are also proposing how we take the process forward. Because I thought it was very clear what was happening, but we'll then assess after that round, and if there's a need for a second round, we will do it in that order. If we could start with you, Honourable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. I don't understand why we need to increase the amount of a period, because the whole point of this, especially the Multi-Party Democracy Fund, and we're getting this funding or this request for funding is mainly to be able to fund this new entity of establishing a Multi-Party Democracy Fund, right? So the whole point is to get money in that account. And we've made provision in the bill for that fund to be able to fund the operations of the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. So when you come here and you say, okay, we need an initial investment and you're starting off for 20 and then the next day you need 30, you're pretty much telling us that you're not going to get any money in that fund. What are we going to do? So we're going to spend 20 million 1 year. What's going to happen the next day? You want 30. So what did you do for that whole year? And essentially, it's fundraising, right? The IEC has been operating this fund. It was just called something different. It has never collected any money, and we understand you didn't market it, or the general public does not know that they can also just contribute to the IEC for that. So we take that into consideration. But yeah, I need clarity on why we need to do this increase. It doesn't make any sense. It means you're not going to make any money for us, then there's no point us investing in the first place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is very similar. As I understand the presentations, what we in fact doing is we are providing the finances to set up the bureaucracy to administer a non-existent fund. Because all that's happened here, and I refer specifically to page 5 of the National Treasury presentation, is that we're seeking to consolidate the existing amounts of money into a new fund by a different name. And as I understood the debate that we had last year, there was a trade-off that we were making here. We were deliberately saying to ourselves, we will place ourselves under certain restrictions, we will have caps, and we will have disclosure limits, and one thing and another. And the quid pro quo for that was that we were going to have a state fund that was going to inter alia make it easier for smaller parties to operate. Now, it appears to us that all we're talking about the fund is the consolidation of existing funds, and even then, there's no guarantee that the provincial funds will actually come into the central pot because we can't repeal provincial legislation. So it seems to me that what we're doing is we're spending 20 million rands in year one and we're spending whatever it is year two and then 37 million in year three in order to set up a bureaucracy to administer a fund that is no bigger or smaller than the pool that we had before. Now, I need to understand from the National Treasury in particular, I can understand why there's no money for this, because, you know, what with VAT increases and, you know, very, very tight fiscal environment, I can assume that the very last thing that the National Treasury wants to fund is political parties. But then I question why we go through this whole process if there's no additional funding for the fund. And even the consolidation of the fund is questionable in terms of law. So I'd really like some clarity about it, because either that or I've been laboring under a misapprehension all this time.
Honourable Miller.
Chairperson, I've been partially covered by my colleagues. The first one I would like to ask is, in terms of Section 3 of the bill, 3.6, says that the Commission may charge a fee to defray the cost of administering and managing this fund, which may not exceed 5% of the money credited to this fund. At the moment, there's no money credited to the fund. But have you taken that into consideration in your budgets? that 5% that you're entitled to, which is some different income to do this. The second thing is the schematic indication that you've given to us in terms of creating this unit. It seems to me a bit big with all due respect. It looks like a huge kind of thing. And if you look at the level of the appointments, you start on level 15, 14, those are very serious senior positions. Is that really necessary? Is that what you need to do? For example, let me leave it there. Thank you.
And then Honourable Singh.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Sorry I was late. I just want to pick up where Honourable Mulder has left. I think we're setting up too big a bureaucracy. I've always learned from a young boy, if you want to make money, you must spend money. Now, we want to try and attract money into a coffer. Now, we have to spend some money to do that, in the first year, at least. And after that, we'll see how things go. So, I'm looking at the possibility of that. You see, sometimes you praise an organization or praise an individual, you add value to them. We've added value to the IEC. We know the role they play. They're very good. We've added value to you. And I can appreciate that you don't want an unfunded mandate. You cannot have an unfunded mandate because at the moment you've got just enough funds to manage your core business, which is the elections, and also manage the funds that you distribute to us. So I would think we must find a way, Treasury and yourself, that, you know, this might not be a three-year thing. As we say, if in the first year we were getting money in, we'll use that 5% to pay IEC. We're not going to use Treasury's money or any money from the fiscus anymore. But for us to be able to get there, we need to start, and we need some startup capital to get this thing going, advertising and that kind of thing. And I don't believe that, as Honourable Mulder says, that it's necessary to have a CEO straight away. You could have some other structure there with your existing staff that you have that are distributing funds already to do the advertising, etc. And we see how it goes. But I can understand that you don't want to be caught midstream with saying, well, I don't have the money to do X or Y now. But I think there can be a meeting of minds here somewhere along the line, because we're also testing the waters. There has been the provision, Chair, for funding from outside sources. But nobody has funded from outside sources. I mean, the IEC had the power to collect money. Nobody. So we're trying something new here. So I don't think we should look at 3 years and these kinds of figures. These kinds of figures really baffle the mind. In any case, our responsibility is to look at the legislation, pass it. The proclamation date and when the legislation is implemented is the role of the president. And if at that time the presidency will be informed that you need 20 million, I'm just using your figure, he might decide, no, we don't have the money, or we have the money. Leave it to him. Our job is to pass legislation, but present also the financial impact. We're doing that today. When you look, Chair, at some of the line items here, I've been involved in budgets for many years, as all of us have been. There's a wish list. There's a wish list budget. You put in a wish list. Now, when I look at advertising 5 million run under the 20 million run column, it seems a bit much that we will advertise for 5 million in a matter of a couple of months, because even if this gets passed now, it'll only be implemented towards the end of the year, and you've got 3 months until the new financial year. You've got conferences and workshops, 2 million. Printing and stationery, 1 million. Now, that's why I say a budget is a wish list, but I don't think that kind of money is going to be spent to achieve the kind of objective that we want. So it's a chicken and egg situation. We can't start this off without any money. You need some resources to start the process, advertise, etc., feel the market, see whether it's going to happen. And then if we don't give them the money, you can't test the market. So I think we can look at a much lower budget in the first year. But we must also bear in mind that if you employ very senior people like is being suggested, what are you going to do with them if we don't have money in the second or third year? So we must find a way of accommodating those people somewhere else. So it shouldn't be too many personnel as we start off. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Gordon.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I think in large measure my input is covered or is aligned to what Singh had said. I actually, at Fort Wood, all appreciate the fact that at least the IEC and National Treasury has made things easy for us, that they have met, discussed, and are in agreement in terms of the budgetary outlook. And like he says, a budget is a wish list. It might as well be, in most likelihood, be that the expenditure will be much, much less than what has been proposed. And anyway, there's no way in which the additional structures can be set up without the injection of capital. Just to start there. And it is not actually being set up to do fundraising, because there is enforcement, compliance, and all those other things that will need to be there irrespective of whether the multi-party democracy fund exists or not, which is a new function to the IEC altogether. So for me, at a principled level, the fact that the IEC and National Treasury have actually met, they are not colliding over the possible figures. I think it should be sufficient for us to let it there. At the end of the day, whatever the budget is going to be, it will be an administrative process. It will not have to come to Parliament.
Honorable Mkalibe, followed by Mkwankwa.
Thank you, Chair. Mine will be a clarity from IEC, because they came to do the presentation in Home Affairs. But unfortunately, we didn't have time to engage with them. So now I'm here, and then I have plenty of time to engage them. When they come before the Committee of Home Affairs, they told Home Affairs that the IEC is estimating startup cost of plus or minus 30 million. But we didn't engage because there was no time. So now is a different figure. And I just want to get a clarity on that one, Huti. How much is the startup cost that they are estimating, because now we are getting different figures. Apart from that, Chair, we were told at a committee level that the bill has now been referred back to the Chief Whiz Forum, and it was requested by the DA for a costing exercise to be conducted. And we have that understanding as a Committee of Home Affairs to say that, okay, so there's no continuation about discussing the bill as an ad hoc committee, and it has been referred back to the Chief's Forum. I also sit in the Chief's Forum, so I have not heard about this matter. So now I'm confused here. There is this process that is continuing, but we're told something else in the Home Affairs. Maybe if I can get that clarity, because we must not have different information as one parliament. Can you imagine if I was going to ask from the Chief's Forum to say that we are expecting this matter to be discussed at the Chief's Forum, and it's here now in the other committee. Thank you, Chair.
Let's deal with that one. I'm noticing Kwanko and other people, just so that we clarify it. This committee has a mandate from the House on the 27th. Now, whoever told you whatever in the Chief's Forum or whatever doesn't and can never supersede what the mandate of the House is. Just can't. So I'm not even arguing whether it was said or not, but if somebody did say that to you in the Chief's Forum, unfortunately, it can't supersede the mandate of the House. And that's why I said, let me give the context in the mandate. And the mandate is very clear. Go back and do X, Y, and Z, and come back and report. So I'm not sure who said what in that meeting, and if they had said it before we had adopted this. Now, then they were totally out of order. I mean, let me just say that, because there was a mandate from the House that said, this is what we do, and adopted by the House, by the way, on the 27th, and that's why I thought, and I think it's in your pack, the actual minute of the 28th of February. It's in your pack, so that is not disputable, that's what informs what we are doing today. Honorable Kwankwa, but the other issues, I think, are valid. Why did you say 27 somewhere and 35 somewhere else? That we can respond if you want to. Honorable Kwankwa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think the matter, I think it was just a reminder from Honorable Corneille Mulder in that forum about the matter that we needed to make sure that we work on this bill immediately before the end of the financial year. I think it was that reminder. The issue here, Chairperson, is that there are legislative functions arising out of this bill, which the IEC has to be responsible for to some extent. It means you are going to have an IEC that is not only going to manage the current fund. I don't know whether there's going to be an increase or not on that one, but that's a debate for another day. But over and above that, it will be expected to manage additional funds. For example, that would be in the multi-party democracy fund. It's only fair and reasonable that the state must be able to fund to cover those expenses. The minimum expenses for that you need to be able to carry out its legislative functions. Otherwise, we're going to have a situation in future where they say, we don't have the money to do what you want us to do. And remember, the bigger picture here is about state capture, or rather the capture of political parties. To say that if you're trying to deal with that problem, I'm not saying that 20 million is fine as a figure that seems to have been to some extent an estimate for now, but if you're trying to solve that problem, if there's no enforcement, for example, or that unit does not have the capacity to enforce, it means parties will still be able to get funding from elsewhere, right? Rather than the multi-party. So it means to be empowered to be able to discharge its functions. But I think what is missing from the presentation, perhaps, maybe it's early days, I don't know, is to say, give us an indication of when you think this unit will begin to sustain itself, right? To be able to sustain itself, to say, in terms of our forecast, this is what we expect, say, after 3 years. It's fine. Fundraising is not easy, by the way. It also depends on the quality and the credibility of the leadership that you're going to put at the head of that unit. If you don't have good and credible leaders there, you will go to find it difficult to fundraise. So you might find a situation where we appoint junior people there, they go in, and they struggle to fundraise. And what's going to happen with all these legislative functions that this unit has to make sure that it does on behalf of the IEC? So we need to have a balancing act insofar as these issues are concerned. I'm saying these 20 million rands, for example, if you look at these amounts, Honorable Singh is right in saying that obviously, with your budget, you do to some extent, considerable extent, thumbsack some of the figures. But if you are going to establish the unit, say, now, say, 2018, 2019, will we have enough time for the people who are going to be recruited, firstly? Because remember, there's going to be a recruitment process to be ready or to have fundraising money by the end of this financial year. It's very unlikely, right? You'll still be struggling to get people who are going to be credible. There's issue of investment management. So it would make sense to say for a year or two, the taxpayer should fund the cost of running this operation, make sure that it's sustainable, and then you bring up a plan that is going to show, to say, how is it going to sustain itself in the outer years, so to speak.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable Tlakuda, followed by Honorable Lees. So I'm sorry, I didn't notice that. Honorable Lees, you want to? She's gives her chances.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, yeah, the question of the figures, estimated figures are indeed estimates, but they seem inordinately high. But the question really is, we've got an existing set of staff and expenses in the IEC now. Those don't seem to have been moved across here. That funding that already is being used, so the two staff members, I think it was, presumably they've got computers, they've got everything that goes with having a member of staff. So I was just, where do they fit in here? And then what office rental will cost R1 million a year? I think it's a year. It's not absolutely clear, but I think it is a year. I mean, it's quite significant offices, those. They're going to cost R1 million. I assume it's part of the existing offices that, I don't know, is there extra space in the building, or just want to know that. Then the organogram shows 17 people, but the costing shows 9 people. I'm not sure that I'm understanding. So if I look at the organogram, count up all the blocks, they're 17. You go over the page and you see number of positions, and it says 9. So I'm not sure where I'm going wrong, because I'm can't believe that you guys in Treasury would make an error like that. And then, if one's going to phase it in, which sounds very plausible to me. I mean, it really does. You can't jump in the deep end here. And, little story, Mr. Chairman, if you'll indulge me. When I was about 3 years old, my father took me to the swimming pool, and it had written, I didn't know, but it had deep end written on the paving next to it. And I said, what does it say, to my father? And he says, well, jump in and find out. And I jumped in, and he then said, right, it says deep end, don't forget. But, you know, perhaps we should learn to swim before we jump in. So if it is phased in, then presumably we're going to have to do something in the original bill to make it phasable. And has someone looked at what is required there? Thank you.
Honourable Bongo.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think, first of all, we may need to take a principle agreement, agree on a principle. Because from where I'm sitting, a lot of other issues that are being raised are operational issues generally. Because if you look at the structure and the work that it may have to engage in, they say it's investment management, investment, investigation and enforcement, party funding research and policy development and fundraising. This work is quite a big work from where I'm sitting, and I don't want us to generally bog us down with the operations. I agree with colleagues who say level 15, level 14 and so on is too much, but once we've agreed on a principle, then let's agree on a progressive realization of this. Of this bill. So a progressive realization may mean let's let the colleagues work on scaling down, but other than scaling down, let's look at other. I'm happy Honorable Shengi is speaking about the Home Affairs. Let's look at other sources, because in government there may be a lot of other people who are there, whom with which we can start at a smaller scale. But generally, the principle, the picture has been painted, and it's a correct picture that has been painted. Now, what we need to do is just to agree on principle to operationalize, scale down, and look at other redundant government officials who may be the NDIC or Home Affairs or in other departments who may taken there to come and do the work, because that will include scaling down. But generally, I accept the presentation, and I think it's a work in progress. I also agree with those who say IEC and Treasury have met. We don't have that hurdle, so let's progressively realize this thing and agree in principle. Then the operations, let's deal with them as we move forward. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Flakuda, oh, you want to catch your breath first, but it's your turn. We skipped you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think, though I had to take an urgent call, what Comrade Bongo, Honourable Bongo was saying is exactly what I wanted to say, that given the fact that Treasury and the IEC are in agreement with the financial implications and also on the implementation part of this. So I think we need to support that, and we also agree with the phases in which they plan to implement this. So on the operational side, of course, it's not our place to be. Thanks.
All right, my two cents with honourable members in trying to marry what we're saying, and I'm agreeing with everybody. Let me just remind us that our task was go and discuss the cost implications to the state, which I think we've done by their guidance. Now, whether it's 20 million rand or 15 million rand or 100 million rand, we never know because it's a budget. I think what we should be saying, honourable members, is that, trying to type what everybody else is saying, is that, and they have heard the sentiment, in our own report we should be saying we've considered the report and we don't think that they should go beyond 20 million rand. It doesn't mean that they must go up to 20 million rand. If you're going to have to put a figure in at all, I don't even know if we should put a figure in our memo, but I think what we are saying is that everything that you're putting in there, you need to reduce. But I don't think we'll be able to sit here and say reduce it by 5 million rand or reduce it by 30 million rand. All we're saying to you is we think that you must cut the fat. In terms of this instrument that is needed to, and it's also not just fundraising, by the way, so as somebody else was saying, it is about accountability, it's about all those things. So it's not about just raising funds. But I think what we should be saying in principle is that we've discussed, we think you're going in the right direction. There's definitely going to be a cost to the state because it's not an unfunded mandate. But that, and also I think your point, Honourable Matthijs, that I don't think we should be looking at year 2 and 3 and 4 right now, because we don't even know if this baby, how fast or how quick it's going to run. I think we should be saying in our report, we've considered it, we've considered the models, and we think that they should not exceed the upper limit of 20 in year one, and it's reviewable. And then somebody could review it, and so that they don't go above board, but also that they know that there must be some cost at least. We can't say don't spend anything. And depending on how much money we get in, the point that was made by somebody, that if there's a 5% leeway that they've got, that even that might offset some of the costs. So we really can't be too specific. I just don't want us to get down and say, because I agree with other members that are saying 30 million, I mean 10 million for audit fees is over the board, I think. But are we going to sit and do that if we've not done the sum? Let's agree that in principle it's going to be a cost to the state. We are saying to the implementers, the bureaucracy, it can't exceed 20 million and it's reviewable annually. Whether it's reviewable by the Home Affairs Department or whoever they account to, that we do it in that fashion. That's my proposal. I'll come to you, but let me take on the prof first. We're just talking about how do we answer this question, because I don't want us to be sitting here until midnight and we're never going to get any answers because there is none. We'll come to you, ma'am. You guys will still respond to all these questions. I was just putting my 2 cents worth in. Let's take Honourable Kubisa, and then we'll take Honourable Least, and then we'll allow them to answer questions. If there's any follow-ups, we'll come back to them. Prof.
Chairperson, I think we definitely need to be specific and just confine ourselves to 20 million, and the rest will be done by the bureaucrats. And I think that's fine in that way. We don't have to go as far as say in that year this should happen. No, I think we've done our part.
Yeah, well, sir. Mr. Chairman, the question of employing people is not a short-term thing. And so if we're going to start saying, well, you can try it for a year, 20 million is your limit, then there's sort of implications for outer years, because people can't simply be, well, you could put people on a contract, but will you get the right people and say to them, well, we're employing you for 1 year? So there's kind of implications that come in. And then the real cost should perhaps be 10 million and we're saying 20 million. So let's talk about the 20 million if we may. And then just to National Treasury, this 20 million figure, Brian actually said that it was kind of, what was the word you used? I rather like the word you used. It was can't remember. Anyway, it's just kind of like, in a sense, a thumbsuck, and National Treasury have no authority to say, yes, we've got 20 million available. So I would really like National Treasury to give us a steer as to how they're getting to a thumbsuck, let's call it that, I'd rather like the other word, of 20 million. Is it likely to be available, or is there going to be a problem?
Honourable Maseko. I did say that they will answer, but just take this one because Honourable Maseko hasn't had an opportunity. Then you will give you an opportunity to respond to all of them. Honourable Maseko.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I would like to agree with your summary and also capping it at 20 million. But I think bringing it down to 10 will be really... I'm just also saying that thumbs up. But I think, Chair, I would like to agree with yourself and Prof. Kubisa that let's leave it at 20. It will be reviewed. So they must go and cut their jacket according to the clause of 20 million that you're giving them. So that then we said we're cutting the fat, we're cutting the frills, let's go basic. And if need be, let's utilize some of, we know that they don't have big offices and stuff like that, but I think initially when we spoke, it was something like a desk, but not necessarily a desk, but something along the line within the offices and space of IEC, but not walking them down and detracting them from their core mandate of elections, but put something there within their reach to deal with this matter. So yes, that's my take, Chair, agreeing to your summary.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure who wants to take whichever. Oh, can we agree that you'll be the absolute last? There'll be a second round because. We'd want them, I don't want them to lose some of the questions that we've asked. We've asked so many questions, but let's allow you to go around.
Thank you. The point that was raised about staff, and we don't want to take staff on for just a year, and then we don't know what's happening in year two and year three. We also don't want to take staff on and then they're just stuck there and they're not doing anything like so many of our government officials, and then we're obligated to pay them a salary. So whoever we're going to employ to take over this multi-party fund must have a clear mandate that they need to deliver. And if they don't deliver within the year, they must have clear outputs like this must be done, and if it's not done, why would we continue something? We don't want to have a multi-party democracy fund that is not bringing us money in. And we don't want to be spending 10 million rand on salaries that is just wasted money where people are sitting there doing nothing. I get that we also have an additional task of administrating the transparency and those things that need to happen, but it can never be to the tune of 10,000 rand. And I think there could be even middle management staff who are able to do that. And you're right, we don't want to get into the bureaucracy of all this. I agree that we should just also say, okay, go and do it for a year, come back after a year, and then tell us how it has happened, have your goals set up. And also, we shouldn't say that if Treasury says, yeah, they have the money, that it's okay. We must remember that we are Parliament, so Treasury doesn't tell us whether they have money. We tell them to go and get money if we agree to something. Thank you.
I didn't get noted you. Maybe... I don't know how many people want to respond, but all of you will take a bite as you take a bite. And then I think, honourable members, if there's still a need, then we must tell them to go away, because as somebody was saying, it then becomes a policy matter. Once they've responded, we then take a policy decision. So we're not going to be grilling you too much. We asked you to come and give us a head start, but we have said to you that this that you're giving us needs to be fine-tuned. That's the broad principle, but let's hear you.
Thank you so much, Chair. I thought I was really tall. I guess not. Thank you, Chair, for this. The first one that I think I have to explain would be the rising cost. So it doesn't matter how much the amount is as a starting fund, but if you're going to have a budget, and as the bill is now, we will have to fund it long term. So you can't really have a static amount in your budget because your administrative cost increases, your salaries increases. If we change the bill and say that the bill will be reviewed yearly and the people that will be employed will only be employed for the year, then the cost of the proposed cost then won't have to increase. But if you are doing budget, especially as Treasury, we can't next year tell the IEC that we don't have funding for the people that employed for the fund. So if we're going to do the startup costs, then we have to fund the 3 years, unless it says in the bill at the end of the process that it will be yearly, then we will only budget for the year. It would not be strategic for us to only budget for a year, but we have to continue with the process. So if the bill changes to yearly, then we can definitely do the budget for the year. We commit to the startup fund as Treasury. We commit that we're going to look for the startup fund. We commit that we're going through the MTEC process to try and motivate for the startup fund. Treasury won't make the decision alone because it is the process that is followed. So once the bill becomes an act and we know the cost of the act itself, then we will definitely apply to try and get the funding. The MTEC process, MinCombat, as well as Cabinet, would be the decision makers in on whether we get the money or not. So you are right, Treasury will not say we have 20 million or 30 million. What we're going to do at the end is once it becomes an act, we're going to present it to these structures and we're going to lobby for funding with all other priorities of government to try and get the money for this. Just the last one from me is the idea, and it's what we were discussing with the IEC. We want to make sure the fund funds itself. So the way in which we see this is we give the startup fund, but the growth of the fund or the continuation of the fund will be funded within itself. So the fund should be large enough to fund itself. That's where we want to end up. That's where we see the sustainability of the fund. Because if it doesn't fund itself, then it's going to be difficult for us yearly to continually try to lobby and get the money. So the envisaged position would be that the fund at the end funds itself. So the growth of the fund should be dependent and linked to the amount that comes into the fund. So the bigger the amount that comes into the fund, then the administration of the fund can be expanded. But for now, what we're trying to work on will be the startup fund.
Thank you very much. I think we need to spend just a bit of time on the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. That it's a novel creation. It's not part of the present regulatory situation. For that fund to be able to attract resources, there has got to be some level of marketing. Our sense is that at the beginning, because it's a new thing, it will require a lot of advertising. It will require a lot of advocacy with corporates, foundations, and those types of bodies. Because you need that groundwork to ensure that there is money coming into the fund. My suspicion, and this personal view, that it is the Multi-Party Democracy Fund is likely to be active in the years leading up to an election. So in those years, it might be well-resourced than in non-election years. Now, when there is no money in the fund in non-election years, the unit must still operate. So it means there has to be a base allocation for the unit to function. In years when it is well-resourced, an arrangement can be made that if it exceeds a particular amount of money, then Treasury can be reimbursed from the fund. An arrangement of that sort is something that could be considered. Because the IC doesn't want to be having extra monies beyond what has been allocated or beyond what it needs. If it's so rich that the money there is so much that it has already covered the function, then we must reinvest a proportion of that to Treasury. So yes, the 5% of the funds will be levied against them, but it depends on how much there is. and I suspect there'll be years where there isn't a lot of money in the fund. I think having had the questions overall, I think we are all agreed that you do not want to have a big structure at the beginning. Hence the proposition in the presentation is that look at the head of the unit and maybe two senior managers and some admin support to start off with. And depending on the quantum of work, depending on the problems that arise, depending on opportunities that may present, then in subsequent years you can progressively grow the unit, or you can decide that it is best to do this thing by using external consulting capacity at certain times and the like. So the issue of advertising, especially in the beginning, is crucially important. And I've just run an advertisement campaign for the registration weekend. So those figures that we've placed there are very related to what the market demands. You know, obviously we're not running a registration weekend, which is huge, but 5 million is not a substantial amount of money, given the work that must be done in the beginning to popularize the fund, to attract funding into the multi-party democracy fund. Now, conferences, it's important that political parties and the unit workshop the new regulatory framework in the different provinces and so on, because it's a new thing, there are new expectations, there'll be new regulations and the like and the like and the like. We can't expect all parties to have the same level of comprehension and the same level of diligence as from the beginning. So you need to give them sufficient interaction and opportunities to converse so that everybody is at the same level. The two staff members that we have, the current RPPF in fact has no staff members at all. Those are the staff which are paid from the budget of the IT bar, that a portion of their salary is charged against the RPPF. 40% in the one case and 20% in the other case. So the RPPF does not have its own exclusive personnel. It's shared costs between the IT and the RPPF currently. So there are no two people to move, in a classical sense. So we may, because they have experience, we may think they are appropriate people to move over, but that will be because they've worked with this type of work before. The organogram vis-a-vis the positions, what we have in the presentation is actually the functions that we believe must be attended to. It's not necessarily onboarded. So that's why we refer to it as a functional matrix. Things that we believe arise from the bill that must have some capacity to deal with. It may be that those functions three or four functions are performed by the one body in the end. So that is the type of exercise that would have to happen to ensure that we have proper business processes that lead up into the creation of POST. The one thing that is crucially important, members of the Ad Hoc Committee, is this. If we agree that we're going to have a phased-in approach, we need to ensure that the legal instrument itself allows for that possibility. Because, you know, when you are sent to a bill, you are sent in total. And perhaps the guys who are dealing with legal matters would have to advise the committee about how we can structure the promulgation such that, or whoever is responsible for that, such that we are able to isolate areas that can be immediately implementable and those that can be done in subsequent years. Now, the issue that Honorable Mkhalif is raising, when we came before the ad hoc committee last year, we said 45 million. That was our, those were estimates then. Then we go to the Home Affairs Committee, we begin to think about, we receive an invite that says, talk to National Treasury, think about the things that you can reduce. So we then gave that estimate in the Home Affairs Committee. Subsequent to that, we have a discussion with National Treasury, and an approach is postulated, debated, and eventually agreed, which is what we are presenting today. So it has been a living organism that changes at different points. Chair, I think the issue of are we not top-heavy, isn't this a bigger bureaucracy? We believe we need 3-4 people to start off with, and we'll make determinations whether we grow this thing and whether that it's a necessity. We're not proposing to appoint everybody in the first day.
On the timelines, when we worked out the 20 million, we worked on a 9-month period because we need to forward in financial years. And the assumption was that the fund would be funded at least for 2 years. The first 9 months, if our assumption is right, that it will not be ready to kick in on the 1st of April, we shifted the date on with about 3 months, and then we worked on costs for 9 months in year one, and then year two and year three. I tend to agree to say that perhaps the crucial funding points would be year one and the first 9 months, and then year one, to enable the fund to just get off the ground and to get money into the coffers. There's also an opportunity, I think, that we will have to because the Act made provision for investments. So we might even look at investing some of the money so that the fund can continue to self-fund from year three, year four going onwards. But it's still very clear. The other point that I want to agree with my CEO is it's no point in not advertising and creating the necessary awareness. We're not going to get funds donated into the fund. We'll have to workshop not only with political parties but also with business to create this awareness. The fund, the provision was there all along, and I've been with the fund forever, and it's only once that the organization approached us to ask whether they can donate into the fund. They then went away and said no, they decided they're going to donate directly to a political party. But in all the years, if we don't create that awareness, the likelihood that the funding will be coming is very slim.
Honorable Chair Danke, by Danke, honorable members, we don't want to talk shop here. Would you allow me to make a proposal, honorable? You want to pose a question to them? Yeah. No, I was going to try and wrap it up because then it might intimidate you. Maybe pose the question, because I was going to try and suggest the way forward. But, okay. Honorable members, I wanted to suggest, and I think I was trying to cover what everybody else has said, that it's futile to try and get to the rands and cents. It really is. I think we're accepting that there's going to be a cost to the state. And we should be saying that for now, the upper limit should be X. And let them go and work on that upper limit. And we're not saying to you that it's year by year. I'm saying even if you said to us that you've got to calculate in 3 years. I did the sums, honorable members. If you take their figures, over the MTF period is 95 million. They take their figures. If we were to put rands and cents, we can put the rands and cents and say in year one it shouldn't exceed this, or over the MTF it shouldn't exceed 95 million rand, or we can just say we've done the sums. I mean, we've discussed with them, we've asked them to, whatever they presented to us, to manage it downwards. I don't know that we want to put rands, and it's not going to be in the act anyway. It's going to go into the memo. So I think it's the principle that we should talk to more than the rands and cents. And if that is what we are talking to, honourable members, can I refer you to page 17 of what we have before us? I think it's called the bill. Page 17, bullet point number 4, that talks about financial implications. Because that's the only paragraph that we need to panel with. The actual bill, I think it was part of your pack, man. Page 17. I beg your pardon? Yes, in the memorandum, correct, page 17. And what we have there that we took to the House previously was what is there now, that it's limited to whatever is required for the additional funding. And that is what was brought back to us. Can I suggest that we change that slightly to say, having consulted with the IEC and National Treasury, the financial implications to the state should not exceed 20 million rand, I'm using that example, in year one. And leave it like that. If we want to put a rand value, or say we've consulted, there's going to be a financial cost, and they must work with the, I don't know if you want to say to them they must work within the range. I don't know, but can somebody propose a wording for four? My proposal is, having consulted with both of them, the financial implication to the state should not exceed, and leave it like that. And if it exceeds, then of course they going against what we've agreed to as the stuff. But the sentiment they know is to work downwards. I don't know that, because Honourable Self, I beg your pardon, Liz, did say that his 10 million is a thumb suck, and I agree. My 5 million would be a thumb suck. But here there was a little bit of work done that came to the 20 million. And all we're saying is work down from that 20 million and don't exceed it. That's the proposal that I'm putting on the table, that we make that change. If we do, then we'll ask Cindy them to go and effect that change on number 4. We'll recirculate it with those changes. We'll come back on Tuesday, take us 2 minutes, adopt it, and return it. That's my proposal, honourable members, because we need to do something on bullet point 4. But I recognise honourable Self first, and we'll come to you, honourable Lees, and then Singh. Honourable Self.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair, and thanks for the explanation. But I'm sorry to keep coming back to the fund. Paragraph 4, as you correctly says, financial implications are limited to the resources the Commission would require to manage the additional fund and to monitor. In other words, it deals with just with the structure that is necessary to establish the fund and to monitor it. Now, what it doesn't address, or none, I can't get any clarity, is how much is the fund going to be? Is the fund going to be the represented political party fund? Stroke, is there going to be any startup money given to the multi-party fund? Now, there's a figure of 5 million rands that's made available for advertising, presumably to advertise the existence of the fund and one thing and another. I promise you, if you get 5 million rands into the multi-party democracy fund, in other words, more money than you spent on advertising, I will take the chief electoral officer out for an expensive meal at a restaurant of his choice. Just as was said, there is no appetite that I'm aware of, if I can use the same analogy, to donate money to a multi-party democracy fund in the absence of tax breaks. And therefore, the financial implications for the state is one thing to say about the regulation, but there's of course more financial implications to the state in terms of the money that either is or isn't in the represented political party fund. Or am I not making myself clear?
No, you're not. Not to me anyway, Honourable Self, because maybe let me say in idiot's language. We all agree there's got to be a startup cost. This thing doesn't exist. For the startup cost, we need a warm body, even if it's just one, to man the office and make the phone call or whatever. So there's got to be a startup cost. There's money in the parliamentary one, but that one goes to parties, isn't it? This other central fund has got nothing as we speak. It's a opportunity for everybody else to contribute to that fund. And we were saying that there must be an instrument to manage it when it happens. I don't envisage that there will be money today. But what we are saying to them, that come 12 months from now, hopefully there will be money in that account. That will be distributed to all members. And I think somebody was saying in elections year it's going to happen. So I think, and I think it was Singh or somebody said it earlier on, that for us to get the show off the road, we're going to have to make an investment. And that investment they are proposing is 20 million. We are saying 20 million might be too much of an investment in year one, but make it 5 million, make it 10 million, it doesn't matter. But once you reach the 20 million, you will be in trouble if you go beyond that. I think that's what we've been saying in layman's language. And unless we do that, we aren't able to have the structure that is going to fund the multi-party democracy fund, which we've all agreed upon in principle in the previous one. It's here. The question is, how do we make it operational? But now I'd recognize Honorable Lees and then Honorable Singh. Hopefully you'll help us answer, because this has really got nothing to do with these men anymore. It's about how we deal with it and how we put it in here. But let's take Lees and then Singh. Oh, and then everybody, it's fine, then we will do it on our side. Can you guys just bear with us for a few minutes? Because there might be some instruction that we'll give to you towards the end, if you don't mind. So we'll take Lees, we'll take Singh, and then we'll take Maseko, we will take Klakude, and then we'll take Melda, and see if we've met each other. Honorable Lees, Baba.
Thank you. Share your...
Sorry, can I also just suggest, as you speak to us, propose way forward so that we can fight with you or agree with you on how we take it forward, Bob.
Your proposed amendment to 4 is that there's a wording put in to limit the funding of year one. What it doesn't do is say anything about outer years. So what it, and unless one says there, it will only exist for the first year, at which point there'll be some kind of review, and I don't think that's what you're saying. But then we must... that we must have, I mean, we can't say year one, 20 million, and then after that you can spend as much as you like. Yeah. So there has to be some kind of wording for that. And I would like us to insert a review procedure, perhaps, and I don't know which committee you write, would review it quarterly in the first year at least. How's it going? What's the progress? And so on. And then at the end of the year, a full review as to the success or failure or amendments that are required. So it's what I'm saying is I would like to see, if we go for the 20 million, fine, let's go for that. But we need to look at the outer years, how we protect ourselves there, and then some sort of review procedure. I would suggest a quarterly review.
Does
this
speak to
the proposals made by Honourable Lees?
Thank you, Chair. The proposal is making some sense to me. Because we can say the financial implications are limited to a maximum of 20 million rand in the first year of the implementation of the Act. And thereafter, it'll be by escalation, inflation, subject to quarterly or six-monthly reviews or whatever. So the review thing, I think, is important. Because maybe in the second year after that, when we leave, we say we don't need your money anymore, Treasury. We've got enough money in the fund. Or we may say, let's scrap this whole thing, the multi-party democracy fund. It's not bringing anything in to us. So, but what I want to know from a legal point of view, the memorandum that is here that we're talking to is not the legislation. It's an explanation of the bill. So it is just telling the country and telling everybody, this is what we are expecting. It's not a legal thing. I don't know, maybe our legal person can tell us the import of this. I'm not saying we should hide the fact, but we should include the 20 million. But what is the import of it? We're not going to be voting on the memorandum. We're going to be voting on the bill.
You guys must answer it. You were in that meeting that brought it back to us. But let's take Maseko, Tlakuda, and then Melda.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the proposal by Treasury brings us to the 20 million and including the staff component. They propose four. And I think in the brainstorm or in these discussions, there was that, you know, leaning more to a staff of four as a startup. And also, when you think of startup and quarterly review, I mean, is it the first quarter when we're still busy with the startup? On that, I would think probably 6 months, because they would still be grappling and trying to find their feet. And there we want to review in a quarter. I think for the first year, maybe let's look at the 6 months instead of quarter. And then we believe that within the second year it will be running itself and other things will fall into place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Tlakuda.
Covered by Honorable Singh and Honorable Maseko on the 6 month review, not quarterly. It will be too soon.
Thank you very much. Honorable Melinda, and then Honorable
Chairperson.
Yes.
I've seen many bills and memorandum, and I can't remember that I've ever seen in a memorandum any amounts being said that the next year it will be so much and the year after that. It doesn't work that way. I don't have any problem with the current wording of Section 4 as it is in the memorandum. What we can do is, in the report to the House, we can indicate that we've had an interaction with the Treasury and with IEC, and that after that discussions, we've got some indication of where we are going, and there we can say we could ask the Portfolio Committee to review in discussions, etc. But the memorandum of the bill, as far as I'm concerned, can remain exactly as it is.
There's something taking us towards closure, but let's hear what Honourable Matthijs says.
My comment is not so much on the wording of the memorandum. I trust that we will make the right legal decision on how it is worded. Mine is on the review. I'm of the opinion we should have a review every 3 months. And reviewing is not so much to say there's no progress, to show that something is going on. So even if you only employed one staff and you bought one printer, it must be done. And I think the sooner you have the reviews done, or the shorter the intervals are, the more likely you are to get results.
For the whole night. We're saying the memorandum should stay at ease, but we're going to write a report to Parliament. And in that report, we can then talk about the review, whether it's 6 months, whether it's a year, whatever the case might be. That's the only, because that's the report. And that report is basically asking for what progress they've done. Have they appointed? Have they identified? That's what the review, I'm assuming, is all about. The review is saying, have you started? Are you within budget and that type of thing? The only question that I'm asking is, in our report, because remember Cindy must go away today and do the report, who are we asking to do that review? Home Affairs, or who must do that review for us? And do we have the power to ask Home Affairs to do, or do we send it to the House and ask the House to instruct Home Affairs? That's what I'm saying, that the House. All right. Okay. Just so that we're all clear, we're not changing anything on this piece of paper. Cindy will write a report that says, a one-liner report, after consultation with National Treasury and the IEC, we think that they can't go beyond 20 million rand and that this thing should be reviewed. You were saying 3 monthly, you were saying 6 monthly. We all know it's by the IEC. What interview are we getting on? Quarterly. So President signs it today, 3 months after President signs it, we have a review by IEC. Okay? Yes, Baba.
You know, there's an issue that we had raised in the presentation, and I'm not sure whether... and that was, in the first year, we're proposing to implement certain aspects of the bill and not others. And I think it's important that the report reflects that understanding, because it's crucially important for us. That the 20 million, to the extent that it's not everybody, therefore it can't cover everything. For instance, issues of enforcement, investigations, and those types of things. I think those must be suspended in the bill in the first year. And I think it's also important that we bring to the attention of the House that although we're talking about the 20 million in the first year and a review of whatever interval, there may be costs going forward. We've got to be upfront about that.
I think we're going to take your point that says, and we'll try and fit it in the report, that we don't expect from A to Z to be implemented when the President signs it, for purely because we all agree that we're not burdening you with unfunded mandates. That's the principle. If there's money, you do it. Currently, you said that you don't have money. Do whatever you can do with the current money. And clearly, things like investigations, you're not going to start investigations in the first 3 months anyway, because what are you going to be investigating? You're only going to investigate after we've done our input. So almost pragmatically, it will be a staggered exercise, but we will put it in our report that we don't anticipate it to be on signing of the president or whatever the correct word is, that it's implemented in phases and dependent on the funding and reviewed quarterly by Home Affairs. That's what we're recommending to the House. All right. Honourable members, if we do that, can we then agree that Cindy and Goldie and all and Michael and all the clever people will go away and do that simple report, because we're not changing the bill? We will then send the report to you by end of business on Monday, and we can spend 5 minutes on lunchtime on Tuesday to adopt it and take it in, because we're all here on Tuesday. We'll call a meeting on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. It'll take us 5 minutes. It's a report. That's the only method that we're going to look at, and that report is going to talk about these things, and we resubmit and we re-ATC. And I'm looking at the clever guys there to see that there are no gaps. That we can't have a situation where it goes to the House or it goes to the Whippany and you guys bring it back because there's some gap in it. So if we can just make sure that those things are there. Honourable Mulder.
Chairperson, I don't have the program with me, but I'm just concerned if we only agree on Tuesday during lunch, it won't be on the order paper on Tuesday afternoon. The report.
I'm suggesting that we discuss it on the 27th, which is that other Tuesday.
Yes.
Yeah. So this Tuesday, I think, is the 20th. We'll finalize it on the 20th, the report, everything, ATC it on the 20th, and then we take it to the House on the 27th. Agreed. All right, Honourable Mitsundi, that's okay. You guys, that's okay. All right, Honourable Singh.
Now that we finalise this, can Octavian tell us that the legal person takes 5 minutes just to tell us what happened in court yesterday? I missed, I just saw a bit of the Chief Justice saying this and that, and I don't know if he's. There was some action in court about this thing here. What was it about? Is it still my vote counts and everybody else? And where is that? Just for our information.
Michael, are you ready to do that? Are you able to do that? Sorry if I am pushing you.
Yes, Chair. I'll take less than 5 minutes. The My Votes Count matter was heard yesterday in the Constitutional Court. It relates to the constitutionality or unconstitutionality of a provision in PIA. The matter was, the judgment was reserved yesterday, so it was the hearing, so it hasn't been finalized. We're still awaiting the judgment of the court in the matter.
Happiness, Mr. Singh?
Yeah, and it doesn't impact on our process. I'm trying.
No, it doesn't. It gives an injection to our process, I think. Honorable Matthijs?
No, we don't have other business, but Chair, I'm very confused about what bill is the correct bill that has been circulating. Because the one that I keep getting on email is different to the one the IEC has given to us independently, especially on clause. What is the clause? 10. So I just need clarity, and I keep getting the same bill that's wrong here.
No, our one is the right one. The one that Cindy gives you is the right one. Yes. Yes. Now we're going to ask the IEC and everybody else not to distribute anything to do with political party funding. It must come from here, because otherwise there's too many centers of power or centers of sources. Honourable members, thank you very much. Just for the record, this ad hoc committee for all intents and purposes is going to meet on Tuesday for 2 minutes to adopt the report. To adopt the report, you'll get the report on Monday. Tuesday, you're going to adopt the report. 2 minutes. On Tuesday, the report and the document that you have, that we already have, will be ATC'd. We will ask the programming committee to put it on the agenda for the 27th, at which point we will present and we will fold this ad hoc committee so that we know the road forward. To our colleagues and friends from the IEC and National Treasury, thank you very much. In our report, it might clarify certain of the things that you're talking about in terms of how we anticipate you getting off the ground, when should you expect somebody to call you in to report and so on. That will be a report that will be sent to you. On that note, honourable members, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned until 1 o'clock on Tuesday, the 20th.